warning.
Okay, thank you so much. So you see there is a long title. The chase keep the long title. So what I'm going to speak about today are, it's more my work about complex quantum networks. So I'm going to anticipate what you're going to speak about in the next week, and then the next Friday. I will not hear, so this is the reason why also I have to speak about it right now. So I'm experimentalist. You will see that, it's not so experimental talk in the sense that I tend to give a lot of mathematical stuff that goes around in order to understand what I do. But sometimes I have some picture of experiment in order to say that we really do it in the lab. So I'm part of the multimode quantum optics group in Paris. And so try to make sense of all the work that I hear. So Claude Fabre is the one that initiated the group, let's say 20 years ago, on multimode quantum optics. So here you have Nicolas Treves that initiated more the quantum frequency comb stuff that I will speak about. And then my part is more about the fact that I want to use that for building a quantum complex network. And so if you look at our website, you see that we have mainly three activities. So the first one is femtosecond quantum information. So we want to exploit the multimode light in the frequency and temporal domain to the quantum information protocol. Then we do also some model approach to multiparameter estimation, more on the spatial domain. And then we have the part of quantum complex network, which is the new one. And I'm going to speak about this talk. So this is more or less the outline. So first of all, I want to introduce quantum complex networks. So here in the room, you have people that are more expert than me about quantum complex network. But I'm going to give you my idea of what they are and why I think that they're useful in my case. And then the kind of network that I can build. So the implementation of entanglement networks, the emulation of network of physical interaction, and network of with non-Gaussian statistic. So, and of course, as I was saying yesterday, I will work in a continuous variable regime in the three cases. So let's start with the quantum complex network. So I start with the classical complex network. So what I define a complex network is a bunch of node and link organized in a way that are in between being regular and random. So they are neither regular nor random. So whatever is in between, I call it complex network. So this is the definition that I use. And why are they interesting? Well, of course, because you have a lot of real-world network that you can describe with complex network. And what I find really interesting is the fact that sometimes you have network at completely different scale that have the same statistical properties. So you can use the same kind of distribution to describe metabolic reaction and also the internet. So you see the completely different scale. And of course, you try to characterize them via statistical properties, meaning that normally what you use are probability distribution of the number of links. And then from that, you can have some kind of emergent behavior, for example, small word, community structure, and corresponding functionality. So you have selection, resilience that come from these properties. So this is how I learned that you can build a complex network. So you start by defining what are physical nodes and ring rules. Then identify how the network grows, meaning, for example, that here you can have a rule that for attaching the new node is going to be more probably attached to a node that already has a lot of link. And then you obtain a family of network. And then you can characterize them via collective topological, geometrical properties. So we can speak a lot about what is topological, what is geometrical. Let's say that I'm just considering structural properties. So for example, what you can have is, as I was saying, you use the degree, so the number of link per nodes. And you can have, for example, which is a typical distribution you can find in real-world network, which is a power law distribution. And then you can use that, so I'm just taking one of the billion of paper that was used this kind of structure to characterize network. You can see that you can have resilience property that comes from, for example, this power factor in the typical power law distribution. These are information networks, for example, the World Wide Web and the Internet. And then you can define other kind of property. So for example, the density, heterogeneity, clustering, that are more, I call them more collective properties. So this is my way of defining it. I'm not really an expert on complex networks. So sometimes I use words that maybe are not the proper one. And for example, These, again, are kind of property that you can use to characterize, for example, the resilience of nectar. So here you have nectar interacting species, and you can see that they are more or less resilient to environmental changes depending on these parameters. So you have a resilience parameter, so the species could be alive or dead, depending on the fact that this parameter is larger or lower than the typical value that depends on density and heterogeneity. So if you go quantum, what does it mean? It means that you could put quantum anywhere. Meaning that you consider quantum nodes, you can consider quantum link rule, and then you can have quantum probability, and then you obtain a family of quantum network. And then you can try to characterize them again with this kind of property that in the quantum domain right now. So meaning that you can ask yourself if this power law distribution could be the typical one, again, that you can use also in quantum protocol. And, or you can try to use this quantity to witness useful quantum network property. So on this part, what I want to say is that I want to point out that I have a collaboration with Lincoln, so I will not have time to speak about in particular this task. But so Lincoln is start to be an expert on this part, and you can have one of these PRL here about how to use these network properties to characterize quantum state characters. So this is a general, more general comment on why I think quantum complex nectar are interesting in quantum technologies, is because actually you can use them to simulate behavior of complex and quantum natural phenomena. So again, here I'm putting one example, which is the quantum transport. So this is the harvesting complex. So I'm not the one saying that I will be able to simulate the harvesting complex and to solve the problem or what they are and so on. What I mainly mean here is that as I can shape my network as I want to shape it, for example, in the kind of topological structure that you find here, and I want to learn from that, especially because I want to learn kind of quantum transport strategy that I want to borrow for more doing quantum information and quantum communication protocol. And then, of course, I mean, if you think about the quantum internet, so the internet is a complex network, the classical one. So maybe at a certain point you are going to have a quantum internet, or at least to have some quantum part of the internet, and you have to ask yourself if it's going to be the classical structure of the internet is going to be used. Okay, then I go a little bit more on physics and the experiment that I do. And then we start with the implementation of entanglement networks. So what are my network? My networks are network made by nodes that are frequency temporal mode of the electromagnetic fields, meaning that you have light with different shaping frequency. And for the moment, the first kind of network I want to consider is the one in which the link are an entanglement connection in the continuous variable regime. How I can do that? By using the quantum frequency comb. So, this comes to the experiment. So what we do is to use optical frequency cone, meaning that we have pulsed laser with a repetition rate of around 100 megahertz and the femtosecond regime. And if you look at them in the frequency domain, you have a comb. So you have 10 to the 6 frequency that you can use. You can try to explore it for your protocol. And then we use that with a very basic process of quantum optics, parametric process. Here is the parametric down conversion. So we look at this process not in the single photon regime, but we look at it in the phase space. So we look at amplitude of the phase of the field that's coming out. So normally, in this procedure, when you have a degenerate case, you produce squeezing. But then, when you have non-degenerate case, the two fields that are produced here are entangled, and you have entanglement between quadrature. So amplitude and phase. So when you merge the two, this means that you pump the parametric process with a frequency comb. So here you have many, many lines that I interest. So here I'm picturing one of the experiments. We have a synchronously pumped parametric oscillator, so we have a cavity around the crystal. And then what is going on? So again, what you have is that if you consider just one line, you produce two different frequencies that could be entangled in the amplitude and phase. But then you can have other combination given by other frequency on the pump that you can entangle this yellow line also with this other line, and so on, meaning that at the end of the day you produce a spectrum in which you have a non-trivial entanglement structure. And then what we can do is to characterize it, so we cannot really access all the line of the comb, but we can access frequency bound. And we can do that with homodyne detection, which is the usual technique to measure amplitude and phase of the field. And so you mix the field with a local oscillator, and we can select one particular line, for example, just by selecting one particular color here. But we can also do more. We can do a multimodal homodyne detection by selecting all the wavelengths at the same time, meaning that we use all the wavelengths to make the homodyne detection, and then we differentiate in the path for different wavelengths. So we do at the same time many homodyne detection at for different lines. And then, as what we are producing here for the moment are Gaussian state of light, it's enough to characterize them by using the covariance matrices. So here what you have are the covariance matrices for the phase quadrature and amplitude quadrature in the wavelength basis. So you see it's a quite strange structure. So the zero means that is the shock noise level. So in the diagonal term, you have the variances. So here you have the low shock noise, you have squeezing. In the off-diagonal term, what you have is entanglement correlation. Then these are squared metrics. You can diagonalize them. This corresponds to a basis change. And the basis change that give us the diagonal matrix is the one that goes from the wavelength to Hermite-Gauss mode in the wavelength domain. Of course, here you have just diagonal component. You can just have squeezing, meaning that if we shape our local oscillator with one of these shapes, we measure squeeze state of light, which are completely independent. You have no more entanglement between them. So this is the main trick that we play a lot, is the fact that by global basis change, meaning that we change the measuring basis, we change the global property, we change the property that we can access from the state. So being a little bit more precise mathematically, all this kind of Gaussian process can be described by symplectic transformation, meaning that input-output relation of quadrature can be described by symplectic transformation, and then you can use what is called a Bloch-Messier reduction for that, and you decompose in three components. So this one is just, the delta is just a diagonal matrix that makes squeezing on the quadrature, and then you have two basis change. So these are just orthogonal metrics that give you a basis change. And normally, when you start, in our case, input modes are vacuum, you can discard the first one, because, I mean, basis change in a vacuum state does nothing. So meaning that in our case, what does the system is to squeeze in the supermode basis, so we call supermode the basis that diagonalize the Hamiltonian. And as we look in a different basis, which is the wavelength basis, we have to consider this basis change in order to take into account what is going on in the wavelength basis. What is interesting is because actually you see that by changing this R, we can change the entanglement correlation in the state. And so this is what we use to build graph state, cluster state of light. So which are state that can, I mean, are considered a resource for a measure-based quantum protocol. And so normally you have mode of light in the continuous variable regime that are arranged in particular entanglement connections. And normally, I mean, theoretically they are built by considering a squeeze state of light, and then you apply CZ gate to them according to a particular geometry here. And so all this process is a Gaussian process, so you can recast in these two main things that we can do in the lab. And in particular, if you arrange the orthogonal matrix, you can build the cluster state that you want. So this is what has been done in the experiment. And here you have a bunch of cluster state that have been measured in the experiment with different shape, and for the moment up to 12 nodes. So in principle, we can do more. So in the experiment, we have more squeeze modes that we can use to build clusters. but for the moment we are not able to measure all of them, so we are working on them. But in principle, you can have 50 moles that are squeezed and can be used for doing blasts.
Can I ask?
Yeah, of course.
What is the light level in each of those moles? So how many photons do we have to think of in a pulse? Is this really macroscopic still?
No, it's not really macroscopic. So the level of squeezing you see is around, 3 dB averaged. So then you can, I think it's less than one photon per pulse, something like that. Well, it's the mean number of photons that you produce is not bright squeezing.
Okay, because the Auger process is so...
Yeah. We are below
the second question, because you initially made this point that these complex networks that you're after...
No, it's not yet complex. Okay. So the idea is that here, still here you have, regular structure, and then I want to go towards more complex one. And then you can ask why, because normally cluster has a regular structure if you want to do the universal one for measurement-based quantum computing. So the idea is that here what they want to study are entangled, mainly entanglement percolation concentration protocol in continuous variable network. So you can think about the fact that in quantum communication protocols, there will be some shape that is easier to use, especially for doing distributed protocol. So here we have just some preliminary work, in the sense that we demonstrate that we can build cluster of any shape. So this is more theoretical work by just changing these orthogonal methods I was saying before. We are considering case in which we start, as an experiment, a bunch of squeeze light with different squeezing level. And then what we found, as we said, this is always possible. And then what seems to be strange is the fact that graph without the connectivity, so the denser one, are easier to optimize. So the way we do that actually is that this operation is defined up to an orthogonal matrix that we can change, we can tune in order to optimize the graph. For us, optimizing the graph means that we are able to squeeze what are called the nullifier, which are like the stabilizer, if you know the graph state in the discrete variable regime, that gives you, in a way, the amount of entanglement that is in your network that you can use. And actually, it seems that it's easier to squeeze more this, to have more entanglements, optimal nullifier in this case. So here, just some results, meaning that we are just taking some kind of graph structure, like, for example, the Barabasi-Albert one, and you can see that actually this is the quality of nullifier that we can have is larger when you have a denser graph, the same for a random network. And then, in any case, if you go towards kind of network that can go from regular to random, so this is what Strogatz that normally is built by starting from a regular connection, and then you rewire the network according to a certain parameter in order to be more random, you see that the regular one is more optimized than the random one. So you see you have some kind of topological structure of entanglement come out from this kind of graph that we start to study in order to see how they can be useful from particular protocol. And in particular, the protocol that we want to study is the one of entanglement percolation and concentration in different scenario. So normally what you have in entanglement concentration or percolation in DV is that you start to produce a bunch of state and then you want to make link. Here you have, in a simple way, a large graph that maybe you want to reshape. And then you want to reshape with a global change, or then you can try to reshape in a distributed protocol, meaning that you give a portion to different player, for example, Alice and Bob, but could be more. And then you want to reshape the graph in order for some particular task, for example, having a particular channel for making a teleportation. So this kind of protocol that we are studying still is work in progress for that. Okay. So we go towards to the next part, which is the emulation of network physical interactions. So in this case, so this is a collaboration with people in Turku and in Palma de Mallorca. So again, my nodes, also in this case, are frequency temporal modes of the electromagnetic field. But in this case, I want to emulate some physical coupling. So it's no more just entanglement. And the idea is that if you consider a harmonic oscillator that interacts with spring-like interaction. So again, you have a Gaussian evolution. So you have symplectic transformation. So this is a kind of problem that you can solve analytically completely. And if you look at input-output quadrature operation, meaning that you want to look at the dynamic of quadrature in the network at a certain time, considering a starting point, you have symplectic transformation here. So again, you can play the game of using the Bloch Messiah reduction in order to map the process to our experimental setup. So in particular, you can consider, for example, starting with a bunch of harmonic oscillator. We are considering 50 harmonic oscillator shape, the physical correlation are shaped in different way. You see that at different time, you have different symplectic transformation. And then you stop at one particular time, you make the Bloch-Messiah transformation, and then you can set these metrics by using the squeezing metrics. And in particular, by shaping the pump of the parametric process, you can get the metrics that you want, more or less. And then you can shape the basis change by using the measurement base that you use for the homodyne detection. So how we did it? Because you can consider the complex network of interacting harmonic oscillator could be considered a structured quantum environment. And so we were testing different environments. So the idea is to be able to reconstruct the spectral density of experimental coupling for different network. What you see here are actually the spectral density. So you have the analytical one, which is the line, and then the other one are numerical calculation, given that we consider experimental parameters. Not yet the experiment, but is what we expect to do with our experiment. So this is, for example, if you consider a Barabasi-Albert random network, then a Watt-Strogatz network, and then more fancy network that are biological network, you can find some repository. And so now I'm going to the last part, which is the implementation of non-Gaussian networks. So up to now, I have been discussing kind of network that I can implement deterministically in my experiment. So I have not to wait for any triggering signal in order to be sure that I have implemented my network, so the network of entanglement correlation and the network of physical interaction. But all of these kind of networks are Gaussian. And you know, if you want to have some kind of quantum advantage, you need have to have non-Gaussian statistic for your field. So what we do in our lab is to produce this kind of non-Gaussian statistic via probabilistic process, which are coherent mode dependent single photon subtraction. So how does it work? So the single photon subtraction, if you have heard about it, normally it's quite simple to realize if you don't care about the modes, in the sense that you can just use an eye transmittivity mean splitter, you send your state of light on it, and then sometime on the reflection part you have one photon, meaning that you know that you have subtracted one photon from the transmission part. But in that way, you cannot select the modes, meaning you cannot select the nodes of the nectum from which you want to subtract the photon. So a way of doing that is to use, again, nonlinear optics. So here's a some frequency protocol in which you have your signal coming on one side, and you have a gate, which is strong coherent beam. And then sometimes you have an upconverted photon here, meaning that you have lost one photon from here, for having one photon here. And what is nice is that you can engineer this process in a way that the photon that you subtract from this signal depends on the shape of the classical gate. And in particular, given a mode basis, you can also send a superposition of modes here as gates, and then you can subtract a photon from a superposition of modes. So this is the theory. And this is the experiment. So this is something that has been realized 1 month ago, more or less, in the lab. So here we send our source. Here I'm considering the basis in which, the stereopodial diagonal. And you see, if I send the first Hermite-Gauche mode here, and I have, if I don't have click here, what I have on all the modes, meaning that we select with homodyne detection different modes, and we made the homodyne tomography reconstruction, getting the Wigner distribution, where we have Gaussian state of light. But then if I get the click, you see that these first modes has a negative Wigner function, and of course it's a non-Gaussian state of light, and we can do it for all the other modes. But we can do more in the sense that I would say that we can build class states. In the class states, the nodes are superposition of different modes here. And if we send a photon, I mean, if we send a gate, which is in this superposition, it means that we can subtract a photon from this particular node. And this is what we did. And what is strange here is that if you subtract the photon from this node, the most affected is not the node itself, if you use this particular geometry, but this is the one on the other side. So this is completely consistent with theory. So here I'm showing another kind of structure in which you have two more nodes here. And for example, if you subtract a photon here, you see that this is the most affected. But then again, the second, which is mostly affected, is this one. And this is really comes from the kind of entanglement structure that you have in cluster, the kind of geometry that you have. And it seems that in this case, you have a sort of enhancement of the effect because you have kind of two paths that go towards this. And I'm finished, actually, so I was really fast.
Perfect.
And so you see here that we start to see kind of topological structure in a non-Gaussian case, which is even less easier to characterize. And why it could be interesting to go towards this kind of non-Gaussian excitation in a completely Gaussian complex network is this is because you can kind of study quantum advantage transport in continuous variable complex network. And then also, as I was saying before, we are working with Lingold because these kind of state are hard to classify. When you go to the non-Gaussian case, classify the state is not easy. So we want to use the measurement of network to look at the structure of this quantum state in order to have a classification of the states. I'm trying to see what are actually the resources for also going towards kind of quantum advantage. So I finish here. Thank you for your attention.
That's actually perfect timing. We have exactly 5 minutes for questions. Questions?
So it's more on the question what is a quantum complex network? So maybe the kind of question you wanted to avoid. But,
no.
So I was wondering, can I consider the part one and part two of what you showed as different levels of quantumness? So the second one was really, I think, of modes like quantum degrees of freedom with couplings. I mean, that's a quantum system, and the couplings describe a complex network. That I would think is as quantum, as much quantum as a quantum complex network can be. And the one before about the state, this is more, okay, the question comes from a quantum system, but then the moment I choose my basis and say I look at that state, I essentially have a classical network because it's nodes with links that are given by the entanglement content.
Well, actually, normally I classify more quantum the first one than the second one, because then you have entanglement connection. I mean, at least the way I use it, because in the other case, I'm just considering a bunch of harmonic oscillators that interact with classical correlation, if you want, spring-like. But I mean, it's kind of thing, it depends what you are looking at, actually, and what you want to why you want to use them. So I think, I'm very pragmatical in the way I look at it, in the sense that I consider more or less quantum something which is more or less a resource for doing particular protocol that give me some kind of advantage. Then from the philosophical point of view, if I really have to choose, I consider more quantum the entanglement network connection than the spring-like coupling. But this is more, I mean, way of thinking. Also because the other one, you can completely describe it classically. You don't need, I mean, well, if you put some quantum state on one node, of course you have a quantum network. But if you just consider a bunch of harmonic oscillators, you have normal modes, there are classical harmonic oscillators. I mean, as far as you don't put any quantum state on it, I mean, it's completely classical description.
I was thinking of those as quantum harmonic oscillators.
Yes, of course, in the sense, they are quantum in the sense that you can put a quantum state. But, and then you can include it, of course, in the kind of generation that we do. for sure. But as far as you consider just, I mean, the interaction, I mean, they are just normal modes of a bunch of harmonic oscillator. Then actually the question that you have is also my question. So the reason why I'm investigating this kind of different network is trying to understand what is quantum there and which kind of quantumness can be used for doing protocol. And especially, I mean, for some kind of task, it's even not, I mean, clear if you really need a lot of quantumness. In the sense that if you look at quantum communication protocol, in which sometimes you require less kind of quantum advantage for doing that, also maybe the kind of classical network structure could be enough for doing some kind of interesting protocol. But let's say I'm quite pragmatic on that in the sense, I try to see what is a resource. And then on the other side, of course, I have a question of what is really quantum or not, and what is more quantum, and then it depends on the classification that you use.
I mean, I've asked this myself.
We are running short on time, but I would like to squeeze in another question if there is one from someone else.
It was long in my answer.
Actually, it's connected to that. I mean, it's just a comment related to that, and it's just the fact that, okay, if you ask what is quantum in a network of quantum harmonic oscillators, or what is quantum in a quantum harmonic oscillator, I mean, these are implementations, Hamiltonian implementation. There is, on top of that, there is the state. I mean, it depends on which state you prepare the network of quantum harmonic oscillator. Quantum harmonic oscillator, you can't say it's classical. I mean, it depends on the state of the quantum harmonic. There are highly non-classical states of quantum harmonic oscillator. So if she prepares, for example, on top of the Hamiltonian network, a non-Gaussian state, then obviously you can't say it's a classical system. It's the same thing as when people say a quantum harmonic oscillator is actually classical, but well, it has very classical states, but it also has very quantum states.
No, absolutely. This is why I thought the second one to be very quantum.
Yeah, yeah. So. But I mean, the fact is that as far as, I mean, the way you normally try to separate the two worlds is what you are able to simulate classically and what you are not able to simulate classically. Then. Yeah. You need many non-Gaussian stuff, you need many modes and all that, but I mean, normally this is the way you define.
Make a very nice discussion next Friday.
but I will not hear, so.
Unrelated question to that. Yeah,
sorry. Some very general questions, they don't know this topic. So how closely is the geometry of the network tied to a specific protocol? Can you do multiple different types of protocols with the same geometry?
Well, this is kind of question that we are exploring. In the sense, actually, I'm really free to give any geometry that I want to my network. This is really the advantage of our setup, which is very rare, actually, because we can have all-to-all connection in our network. Of course, we don't have strong correlation between the modes, but really we can do any kind of own geometry. And then we are trying to see which kind of topology are the nice one for doing kind of different protocols. So I expect also because in the classical case for communication protocol, you have kind of topology of the network that are more resilient. I expect that also in the quantum case, we are going to find more resilient structure for doing quantum communication protocol, for example, like the quantum internet. So internet has a kind of structure that is quite resilient in the classical communication scenario. So the idea is to try to study which are the topology that we can use for quantum communication protocol. Are they the same or not? Especially in continuous variable regime, which is not exactly the same as discrete variable regime, but in this kind of other discussion.
Please go set up and we can continue chatting while Ulrich is setting up. Anyone want to say something?
Lincoln. That's just a comment, though. Is that okay? Okay. My comment is that I think most of these questions are unanswered. So the robustness of quantum complex networks is an unanswered question, and there are many aspects to it that are very different from the questions you can ask for a classical network, because there's so many more ways you can interrogate a quantum system. That's one point. The second point is the interplay between the structure of the Hamiltonian, as per Michael's question, and the state. Like, that's also a very unanswered question for complex networks. So, I mean, basically, it's an open field. And I think it's great we have an experimental platform to address it, as well as, I guess, Yelena's platform is another one. But so it makes a nice area of research. So I hope that that's come across from Valentina's talk. But I just want to make a comment that And there's a lot of low-hanging fruit for theory there.
Just to conclude, I mean, to finish the comment, is that here you have to define two different words. One is the complexity, what is complex and complex network, and one is quantum, what is quantum complex network. Right. When you try to merge the two, I mean, start to be more complex, if I can say that.
Pretty good. Thank you, Valentina. Yeah.